07.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Okay, here we go. Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic, a special edition because it's three magicians, three microphones.
Three magicians, three mics.
My name is Nick Paul. That is Simon Cornell, and today we have Rocco with us today.
Hey, Rocco.
Hello, Nick. Hello,
welcome,
Simon. Thanks for having me here.
Good to have you.
Thank you.
Are pretty cool.
Joining us, we found another section of the underground lair in our ever-ending search for a place to record in Macau.
Last week we were talking about the weird room that we were recording in and how odd it was to be in this, you know, strange, bizarre structure.
But yeah, Rocco, you've been doing the House of Magic with us. You've been here much longer, like 2 months longer than we have, essentially. And you're almost done. You're almost free.
Yes.
What has been your experience in a nutshell? Positive, exciting, life-changing?
I came prepared to do 400 shows in 3 months. It doesn't even look like I'm going to hit 250 shows in 3 months.
Interesting. And is that a... is that good?
Well, I'm going to go home with a bunch of extra ties and a bunch of extra Snickers and a bunch of extra props.
Can I just preface that I was worried about purchasing 60 large balloons to reuse? You have so much stuff in your show. You produce Snickers, you produce gum, you produce, you cut a tie, restored, peanuts, confetti,
streamers.
And that's one 15-minute show.
Yeah.
How do you go about organizing all of that?
Pocket management, you know. I have a list of stuff that I had to order. I got my guy from China. I gave him the list, and he had everything shipped here.
Wow.
And just organizing everything, doing 400 shows. Yeah, that was a tough one because the tournament store newspaper, for example. I knew I wasn't going to have time to make them here with a little bit of setup time we have. So I made them. Took 2.5 weeks to make one at a time. Glue, cut.
Holy Christ.
Glue, cut, and then ship them all. And then decks of cards. So you go through a deck of cards every show. So you had to get cards, you had to fan them up. So doing 400 shows and up, that's the work. Mm-hmm. Performing easy, I do that for free.
Yeah.
But it's getting here and setting up for the show, that's what they're paying me for.
Yeah. Sure.
That was a lot of work. That's work.
Is that something you had, not just this gig, but in general over your career, is that something you had to kind of learn how to do in terms of just prepping the show?
Yeah, I got little bags. Like when I do my normal show, it costs me about $80 to perform each show. This show's costing me about $11 per show to perform.
Wow.
So I got little plastic bags, and in the bag, I got a styrofoam cup. I need a balloon to put on the cover when I produce the confettis. I got one of those balloons. I got snowstorms. I got glitter, confetti. I got electronic cigarette. I got a squeeze ball. I got electronic pipe. I got a newspaper. I got a deck of cards. I got slush powder. So everything's in one bag.
Wow.
So I take one bag with me, and that's one show worth of stuff. And normally when I go do a show, I don't have to bring any props. Just everything gets left behind.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest prop is the little table that folds flat.
Yeah,
sure.
And my suit. Everything else in my show that uses props, I come with a big bag of stuff, and I leave with nothing. That's what I like about it.
Mm-hmm.
Smart.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a two-time FISM winner, correct?
Yeah, like Simon.
And Mike
Rocco actually won, though, and got awards.
The which one?
I always say two-time FISM award winner because I didn't technically win the whole thing, you know.
So you won the
FISM
entire
award.
Actually,
once in 1996, I think.
96,
yeah. Wow.
And once in 2006.
So the FISM is the Olympics of magic for laymen?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how I've heard it described before, which I don't know if it's completely accurate.
If I get bored down the road, I'll probably go do it again just for the excitement and the fun.
Yeah, that seems terrifying to me. I think everyone
should try
to
compete once because it does raise your level of performance, of creativity, because you're on a spot.
Yeah.
You know, your adrenaline is up. You know, you're going to be in front of them. You're going to be judged. You're going to be on your mark. And all of a sudden, ideas come from outer space. Wow, let me try this. Oh, that's never been done. Let me try this. So it is a good way to get creative, is to push yourself to the limit.
Sure.
Push yourself to the limit.
Yeah, I always found that magic competitions were a good growing experience.
Yeah, I recommend them to everyone.
Yeah.
At least once to go try it.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things you learn. There's a book. Everything you need to know, you've learned in kindergarten. Always putting milk and cookies back. Everyone should have a patent. everyone should go compete at least once, wow, just to raise your level.
All right, well, we have transitioned over to Rocco's apartment, a little bit quieter, less 2000s pop playing, and we're out of the CIA and into Rocco's apartment. And Rocco, the last question I believe I gave you was best experience, worst experience, audience experience here, because we always kind of deliberate after each show and kind of talk about how that audience was, what we could do better, if it was them, if it was us. What were your thoughts on that?
Relating to the audience.
Yeah.
The best experience is when you have a full crowd, when you have a full house. It's the best experience. And when you have a little crowd, it's not as bad as I thought. Because you've noticed, when we had small crowds, they still had a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably the bad, worst experience, if the earlier shows at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they're probably not as energized as they are at 8:30.
Sure.
And maybe the worst is somebody loses a lot of money and then have to sit through a magic show. They're not really in the mood to watch a magic show. But we haven't experienced any really bad shows here. You know, these are in Chinese style. My worst experience is when you have too many kids in the audience and then they start grabbing for stuff and start touching you and start going in your pockets. But that hasn't happened much here, but that's normally, that happened once in these shows here,
yeah,
right? You realize you experienced that?
Yeah.
Grab it at you and...
I mean, it's easier for me because I'm working almost entirely from the pockets. You know what I mean? I don't have any props on stage or anything or any tables or whatever. But yeah, I've definitely had some, like, you know, nightmare kid situations where someone just pains in the ass.
But overall, the audiences here have been very respectful. They've been respectful. And of course, I noticed, you know, from working for so many years in China, that they love free stuff.
Well, there's a part where you produce, what, 20,000 euros?
Yeah.
Fake euros,
yeah,
but
fake
euros. I thought it was real for a while. That's how real the banknotes you got look.
Yeah, yeah. they think they're real too, and they're grabbing for them, they're taking them. I was walking down the casino, like one after a show, like an hour and a half later, and some guy and a girl come and they give me money. I said, what are you giving me money for? And I went to look at it, it was one of my bills that they had saved from before. So it's a great way to put your website on it because people are going to save that bill. And it's kind of like a souvenir to take a little piece home from the show. And I like giving gum out because gum, when you're chewing gum, it makes you happy and it makes you respond more in the show when you're happy.
Mm-hmm.
When people are chewing gum, they're relaxed. Mm. They're doing something. They don't have to be on the phone. They don't have to be talking. They don't have to, they're doing something else and they can watch
it. I never thought of that. It takes away the place of needing to check your phone.
Yeah,
and it would never thought of that.
Because you're doing something. They don't want to smoke. The desire to smoke went away. Somebody wants to get out and they're anxious or they're antsy. It relaxes you. So they're chewing gum while they're watching my show and it makes it a peaceful mood.
So you knew Franz prior to working here. You worked, you know, kind of the promotional, the way he sold this place.
Yeah.
How long, what's your experience, how long have you known Franz, and how long have you been doing magic in general?
Yeah, I think apparently, according to him, we met in 1987. He told me that we were introduced to each other by Steve Valenti. I don't remember exactly that, but I do remember us working the Magic Castle several times in the palace, working together. He interviewed me for some type of interview that's coming out 10 years ago. And he hired me 2 years ago to do the promotional here. Me, Joaquin Ayala, and another act that was at FISM. The beach act that produced the same.
Oh, yeah. I remember those two Germans, aren't they?
Their videos playing up there.
Yeah.
It was us three. Franz rented a ballroom, set it up with a screen, invited all the VIP buyers, I think, from every casino. And that's how he made his pitch. That was 2 years ago.
Sure.
And congratulations to him. He sold it. It's a great venue. You can see the theater is so complex. It's the stage, the way it operates. He's a genius.
And that's actually a question I had about that. So he pitched, you know, he pitched this idea for this venue, and it's a, you know, this interactive venue with four different rooms and this whole experience with it. But when the pitch thing, it was just a show that they pitched. So is he going, this is an example of the show that would be in this crazy big venue?
Yes, it was open to the public. People would buy tickets, come in, fill the room, held about 2,000 people in the audience. It was just a ballroom where they built a stage, a raised stage, and the seats were all, you know, flat that they brought in the seats. And it was a success. The audience loved it. He did most of the illusions he was doing here. And I guess he got the attention of the big shot here at Studio City called Sonny. Mm. And they got his attention, and 2 years later, they made it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's been giving work to a bunch of magicians, and it's a great venue to work, obviously. That's probably one of the best experiences. Like, you don't have to go see, chase the guy down for money. You don't have to go chase the guy. There's a check going to clear. Oh, you got to wait 60 months. Oh, we didn't have enough people, so we could only give you this much money. Oh, it's good promotion. You know, they're automatically dropping money in your bank account, and it's a lot of money. They're paying a lot of money to perform here, so that's one of the benefits. Everybody's so nice. You don't have to pay for your taxi. You don't have to pay for your food. You don't have to pay for your maid. I think the treatment here is absolutely great. Mm-hmm. I hope it's around for a long time.
You've been doing magic a long time. How has just this experience of 250 plus shows changed you, do you think?
Yeah, here's an example of how it's changed. When I used to rip up a flash bill, I would light the whole bill and get a lot of flash. Now I realize if you do that 6 times a day, you're bound to burn yourself or singe your skin or become a little cow. So now I just rip it all up, throw most of it away. I don't even use it, just use a little portion of it to get that little flash so I don't have a lot of heat burning on my hands, because doing that over and over again creates problems on your hands. You get a blister, and then you get another blister. And I was in the beginning, that's what I was doing. Every other day I was getting a blister. I said, okay, I don't mind getting a little burn, but doing the same thing, putting out that tie. I used to put a little lighter fluid on it, and I used to put it out with my hands. You do that 6 times a day, you're going to start building calluses here. So now I put a little bit of lighter fluid there, and I just let it burn out by itself to restore the tie.
It's funny how little things like that add up, because two days ago, I stabbed my pinky with right. a fork. And any other gig, you'd be like, okay, whatever, it's fine, yeah, it'll right. heal. But then you realize, oh, I have to do 6 shows or 8 shows tomorrow, right. or whatever it is. And you have to adjust to that. And
especially when you have to do a show and you got 7 minutes to set up.
Sure.
I mean, I'm just getting done. I said, oh, music's on again? I got to do it again? You're kidding me. So now you're performing. And I realized I just did, for example, the tie trick 4 minutes ago. So I'm not used to having to do it again. I think, oh, I just did it. So I forget doing certain tricks.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember you saying that, yeah.
Because I just remember doing it like 2 minutes ago. I just did it. So I just ran through it. So I forgot to do that because I just thought that I did it 2 minutes ago and I put both shows together. But now you get used to it, because when your adrenaline's up and you're all pumped up because you just got done getting the applause, you're energized for the next show. You don't have to come up to do a show. You're already up. So I find it easier to do 2 shows back to back. I looked at it like not 6 15-minute shows. I looked at it as 3 half-hour shows. Mm-hmm. Just combine them together. And it's great to see what works, what doesn't work. What works, try this, try that. You know, I developed a lot of little things here, like putting the peanut in the mouth and blowing out the smoke. Mm-hmm. And then when I offer it to someone else and I ask them to blow and they don't blow, it gets a laugh. That's a keeper. That was developed here. Having the guy stand up and sit down with the newspaper, stand up and sit down. 3rd time, I just look at him. And they know it's time for him to stand up. That was developed here. Mm-hmm. By doing it over and over again, every day, 7-8 times a day, you're bound to develop some masterpieces that you're going to keep forever for your future shows.
Yeah, because you're looking at moments that you haven't previously examined.
Yeah, and the Chinese people, they think different. You know, maybe what doesn't work in America will work here, and what doesn't work here won't work in America.
Yeah, that's I'm worried I'm going to go back and like all my bits that have been optimized for the Chinese audiences now suddenly don't work. And it's like, oh man.
Well, you have a benefit because you speak Cantonese. Yeah. You got them right in the palm of your hands.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, having the language is definitely useful.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying it's weird the differences between the different rooms, you know, the different challenges we all have, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doing the same thing, but still very different. Yeah. Like his room is a different shape and size
right.
than my room. I prefer the way my audience is set up, but your room is better for angles. So it's like these little differences, and that affects each audience.
But I like your room because of the aisles you have.
Mm-hmm.
I like walking into the aisles, the hand stuff, and
you have access to more people in that room.
Yeah, yours is really on the front row. Yeah, yours is more traditional theater style.
Right, right, right. And I like the front steps that people can walk from the front steps instead of having to go to the side.
Sure.
You have two side steps on yours.
That's actually a really good point, because there's nothing super angly in your show, is there, Rocco?
No, not at all.
It almost makes sense to have you in the...
it really does.
It makes sense for you to just swap venues now that I think about it. I'm like, actually, yeah, because then you'd have the aisle access people. Neither of you are angly.
Well, you'd prefer being in my room?
I like the way the audience is set up, like in the way that they're sitting. But your theater wise, I tend to use the wings a little bit more in the stuff I do. So that would be a little bit more helpful. But it's a good adjustment. It forces me to re-examine stuff. And I prefer, we were talking about this the other day, I prefer magic that can be done from most angles.
Of course.
I think that's important. 'Cause if you're only writing stuff from an audience perspective directly in front of you or sitting down or things like that, I think that's giving yourself a little bit too many excuses. If you're writing stuff for a show, you know, if it's just little one-off things here, great, awesome.
No, it is more angry, especially what's angry is that you have the tiered seating.
You have
to watch, like, for example, I do the down palm with the coins.
Yeah.
So I can't stand too far up, because if I give them the good angle, I know they're going to have an up angle on it.
Yeah.
And if I give them the up angle, I know they're going to see underneath the coin. So you have to stand back a little bit to find out where that medium is so nobody gets a flash.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you have tiered seating. Yours isn't that tiered seating.
It goes up a little bit, but there's a couple parts. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that. There's parts I've forgotten to examine, so I really should go back and look from certain angles. I've looked at the sides, but I haven't thought about height.
Well, you don't have too many angle problems, you know?
Well, it's just interesting how every space is different. You know, a comedian can go into any room and go, okay, it's like this, great. But a magician really should take at least half hour or more before each venue and just kind of
feeling the space out. Especially if you're doing cards, you know, you don't stand back. You're going to get an angle from over here. Then if you're working on that angle, your back is covering in. They won't see it. So you have to figure out where to be. Yeah, you know, magic is angry.
How did you discover what works best for you and your character and your style?
Years of trial and error. Years. You know, knowing who you are on stage is the most important thing. You know, it's not the effect that makes the star, but rather the star that makes the effect. So you have to know, and just experience of working with an audience and listen to an audience. I've tried a lot of stuff that didn't work. Okay, that didn't work. Let me try it again. Don't spend too much time on it. If it doesn't work a couple times, edit. But you learn from that experience of why it didn't work. Like Thomas Edison said, you know, it took him 2,000 attempts before he created the light bulb. And they asked him, how did it feel to have failed 2,000 times? And he says, I learned 2,000 ways on how not to make a light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still a learning experience when things don't work in your show.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to discern the difference and be able to don't get married to certain material. If it doesn't work, the audience doesn't respond, take it out. I mean, I've done over 200 shows in China, in all different parts of China. And this is where I developed the Snickers and the gum and the peanuts, because I realized that this is what they want. They want to take home a piece of that magic. They think that that gum is magical. When I was working the big theaters for 3,000 people and I'm producing gum, and the parents from the back of the room would tell the kids, go get some for us, go get one. And they're all running up trying to get it.
Wow.
And I'm like, that's entertainment. That's entertainment value. So I'm here to entertain it. I'm just a clown. Another version of a clown, just, you know, jumping up there and giving them that magical experience. We're making people happy, we're making them smile, they're releasing endorphins, and we're like doctors in a way, creating, you know, peace. They're forgetting about their problems of the world, because the world, as we're going to see, is very scary, it's decaying, you know, we're here, born to die, and there's nothing fun about that. You know, somebody out in that audience has a family member that's dying, that's in a hospital dying, someone in that audience member has a terminal disease or a cancer. Someone in that audience is suffering from pain or a broken relationship or something's wrong in their life. And for that time that we're performing, our job is to make them forget about that. We suspend them from their problems into the world of where everything is possible. That's the beauty of what we do. We've got the best job in the world.
Yeah, in so many ways. And we were talking about this the other day. I'm so thankful to work with guys like you and Simon and so many other performers who just yeah, the magic is important, but the what the audience is seeing is so much more important, because you have to, if like you said, if it works, great. If it doesn't, you have to let it go. You can't be married to anything.
And for us, sometimes we get bored of doing the same thing. You know, you'll feel like, oh, this is not, they're not exciting to you no more. But that's the first time they're seeing it. So for them, it's new and fresh. So you have to present it as if it's the first time they're doing it.
Yeah.
This way they see it at its best. We owe that to the audience. If they're spending money to come see us, you got to give them 100%.
And how do you give 100% when it's like you're performing for paint drying, when it's a really quiet audience? How have you just... I've kind of found some... I'm working on tricks for myself, because there's times when it's frustrating.
I do have a secret for this. And what it is works that? For me big time. I look at the person like the youngest kid, 4, 5, 3 years old, 7 years old, that just has that gleaming smile on their face. And I just keep looking at them. I just keep going, wave to them. I say, whoa, and I see their reaction, and that feeds me. So I'm just doing it for her at that point.
Nice.
I just pretend you're the only one here. Here. I'm just playing to her. And I see her response, or him, with the little boy or little girl, and that reaction I'm getting from that person. Forget the whole audience. I'm just doing it for him now. And they're feeding me. I'm saying, hey, what makes me happy? I look like him. See that smile on his face? I feed off that. Yeah, there you go. Here you go. So it's just me and him now. Mm-hmm. They're just in on it watching. But I'm actually just doing it for you at that point.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And how long did it take for you to figure that out? Or is that something you just picked up naturally from as long as you've been doing that?
Yeah, well, listening to the audience. And then that brings more charm at you. Because if you start getting mad at the audience, which, you know, I've had in the beginning... you know, so just look at that one person that does have that smile on their face, and that brings
it out. Because even if it is a quiet audience, it's just odds are at least 50% of themselves are enjoying it, even if they're not verbalizing it.
Of course, you know, laughter and applause is misdirection. I know when I watch a movie, I don't applaud every time I see something great. I'm like, wow, that was great. And your mind is analyzing it. When I see a great magician, I'm more like this. I really don't want to plug, because that distracts me.
Sure.
I just still enjoy it. If you're mesmerized, you don't have time to plug. And it's actually a compliment. When you got people not doing nothing at all and just staring at you and not blinking, that's more of a compliment.
You can feel the difference in silence. You know, there's difference of awkward silence and difference of listening silence.
Right, makes you sweat. Awkward silence makes you sweat.
Yeah,
brings out perspiration from you, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I think it's just regaining control of those moments and being able to identify how much you need to adjust.
I think I'm something with years. Say, I don't care. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. If I used to drop something, I used to get now. Pick it up. I'm not God, you know. And it kind of creates that human bond between you. They say, hey, this guy's just human. So you work it as an asset. If something happens that's wrong, you say, hey.
One of my favorite. One of my favorite improv teachers said, any type of mistake is a gift from the improv gods. And I look at that just like for magic too. You know, if you mess something up, it's like, oh great, that moment has now become real. And we're all experiencing that together for the first, even though it's something you've done 1,000 times, now you're experiencing it again for the first time.
It's like how you get out of it, you know.
Sure.
If you get flustered, I mean, I have two basic lines that I use when something goes wrong. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. Or, hey, I'm not God. And I get the response, and they understand that, you know, like it's like watching the juggler. When he misses something, it makes you realize how difficult that really is. So, you know, take advantage of a disadvantage.
I do love it when a juggler drops something, though, because you do see the audience go,
but then comes that recouping yourself.
Yeah, but if they can recoup, that's how you know you're watching a good juggler.
Really on top of it.
And
right?
Also, if you trace it back and go, oh, they did that on purpose.
I worked with a guy at Disney who
purposely wouldn't. He'd do this tall catch. He would balance a long basketball hoop on his chin. It was probably 10 feet high, and he'd throw it up and he'd purposely miss the first time.
Because
he could get it the first time, but the audience didn't know that.
Yeah.
And it's way more impressive to the audience if it takes more time.
The magician that fails to find a card and takes a couple attempts. They're like, when you finally do get it, boom, you just lead them down the path just to zap them later.
Mm-hmm.
You do that with the card, the mouth?
Yeah, well, thanks to you guys, and thanks to help. And that's just a discovery process.
Yeah, right. Listen to your audience.
Yeah, how can you get it to a higher response level, you know?
So you guys got plenty more shows to do here. So I'm sure you guys are going to be
evolving. You're literally in 1 week left.
A week left for you.
Yes, one more week.
So what happens? You going back to Jersey? You're going to travel?
Yeah, no, I'm going right to Las Vegas from here.
Nice.
I'm working on some products that I'm going to be putting together for Murphy's. We're coming out with a new sound prism light. A light that has sound to it.
So for those, for the non-magician listeners, Murphy's Magic is a large magic product and so on supplier.
Mm-hmm. When will that be out so people can give you money?
May.
Okay, and so keep an eye out.
Murphy's is interested in putting out my cut and restore tie.
Okay, cool.
So we're going to Vegas to put that all together. I'm bringing all these ties back to me from China, and they're putting out the ultimate sleeving device.
Oh, yes, okay.
When I showed you the other
Because you are the expert on that style of magic. Yeah. I've never seen anybody do it as well.
And as much.
As much, yeah.
I mean, there was a guy, I forget his name, but back in the 30s, he said, if you use sleeving more than once in your show, you're doomed for disaster.
proven that wrong.
Yeah, well, that was before I combined the misdirection and timing that I learned from Slidini.
Sure.
Including that timing into it. I mean, I remember doing it for one of the smartest people, Jerry Andrus.
Oh, yeah.
One brilliant genius. And he said, you know, I watched your show, and I had no idea you were sleeving until I saw your lecture. I said, wow.
Wow.
And the same as Channing Pollock told me the same thing. I didn't know you were sleeving until you did your lecture. Mm-hmm. So that diffuses the fact that you could do sleeving more than once, because it became a cliche. It's in your sleeve. Mm-hmm. It's in your sleeve. And they've been sleeving since the beginning of time. In the Book of Buddha, for example, I was in Singapore, and I opened up the Book of Buddha. And there they had the Bible and the Book of Buddha. And I looked at the Book of Buddha, and there's a passage in there that says, delusionment and enlightenment originate from the mind, just as different things appear from the sleeve of a magician.
Wow.
So what that means is that enlightenment, for you to be enlightened, enlightenment is making this moment the greatest moment. That's enlightenment. Like right now, we're not living in the past, we're not living in the future. This is the moment, now. So making this moment the greatest moment, that's enlightenment. So you have to put that thought in your mind for it to be there. Just like sleeving. For it to come out of your sleeve, you got to put it there. So what I studied with a misdirection is how to put things in here while no one knows. Like that.
Mm. You know, just you literally did that right in front of me, and I didn't see it.
Okay, the big motion covers a little motion. Yeah. The misdirection's over here, and I'm able to load my sleeves right in front of you. Now that they're loaded, they're just ready to come out.
Yeah.
You know, and back then, you know, and those guys that traveled, their sleeves used to be this big. So they used to carry, you know, they used to have pockets in their sleeves where they carried their food and their money and their things that they needed in their travel. And so, you know, so things that appear from the sleeve of a magician, it's got to be put there first. And that's the hardest part, is putting them there. Because once it's there, gravity does the rest.
How much time did you... Oh, go ahead.
I was thinking, for you sleeping, was you always mentioned Slidini. Like, how did you meet him? How did you learn from him? What was the backstory there? How influential was he on, you know, the magic you do and the way you do it?
A lot. Because when I got into magic at 19 years old, I used to go to the magic shop, and I bought my paddle trick and bought my thumb tip and bought the dot trick. And then I said, who are the greatest magicians in the world? And they told me about two of them. One was called the Master, and one was called, what was he called? What they called that room?
Well, the Professor.
The Professor. Yeah. One was the Master, one was the Professor. So the Master lives in New Jersey, in New York. His name is Slidini. And there's one from L.A. called Di Vernon, the Professor. I said, right, who's this Slidini guy? So I went to a magic lecture, and there was a guy there, Bill Wish, who was a student of Slidini. And I said, I want to contact this guy, Slidini. I called him up on the phone. He told me, come and I'll meet you for no lesson. Just want to meet you and wear a jacket and a tie. Every time you went to visit Slidini, you had to get dressed up with a tie and jacket. He wanted you to look that way. And he met me and he said, I'm going to take Jan as my last student, because we used to speak Italian to each other. So that influenced my life a lot, because I realized you could do magic with ordinary objects once you learn technique. So I stopped buying stuff from a magic shop. Most of my magic isn't from a magic shop. It's learning principles and theories and technique and misdirection and timing, because with lapping, he was able to do all these effects. So I took those same principles of timing and misdirection, how he uses the lap, and I incorporated them into sleeves. This way you don't have to be sitting down. You can stand up and reach bigger people. So really, I'm just doing close to magic on stage, just presenting it with a little bit of what they call showmanship.
What was he like as a person?
He was a teacher. He was a great teacher. You didn't do it exactly like him. I mean, I remember learning the coins for the table. I was doing it, and I came down, and I was fooling my friends. I was fooling them. I never got into magic to make a living or make money with it. It was just basically just to go out and meet girls and become popular and become the center of attention and fascinate you and look at the face, and you know, when I made something disappear, pulled behind your ear, whoa, I wanted that feeling, that giving you that wonderment. So I never wanted to make a living at it. So I was doing coins for the table. And I go there and I do it for a slave dean. He says, "You do that for people?" Yeah, I fool them. He goes, "No good." So why? And then he showed me why. You know, his timing. You know, like for example, when he did the Hin Pin Cheng move, I would just do the move. He wants you to do it. If I have 3 coins in my left hand, how many coins do I have in my right? At the end of the sentence. Mm. The timing was to be at the end of the sentence. If I have 3 coins in my left hand, how many coins do I have in my right? Instead of just, look. So it brings more attention to it. Right. Like putting a pointer on the effect. How many do I have in my right? You're telling them what to look at. You're asking them a question at the same time you're doing the move. So it became more emphasis. Okay, I understand that. And I would do things for him that I thought were perfect. And he said, no good. And so why no good? Well, when you drop your hand down to lap something, you're going too fast. Oh, you're going too slow. Oh, that was too fast. So what's it gotta be? So what he explained it was, you take your hand like this and you make like a gun. You stiffen up all your muscles, then release and let the natural weight of your hand drop. And that's how the timing had to be. And then he explained how the same time this hand hits the lap, the same time this hand will hit the tabletop. So you make a gesture. Same time this hand hits the lap, the table, the same time this hand hits the lap. Then explain the economy of motion. If you want to produce something from your lap, you don't just swing down and get it. When this hand reaches the furthest distance, that's when this hand simultaneously moves in conjunction. And you don't just produce here, you have to look at it. You can't just look at it and have your shoulders over here. You have to give all that misdirection there when you produce something. Yeah, see? Because where you look, they look. Mm-hmm. So I took all those principles and just added the sleeves to it, and I do the exact same moves using my sleeves, which you can create bigger items because if it fits, leave it.
Wisdom for life, right? Yeah. If it fits, sleeve.
That's the title of your autobiography. Yeah. That's
right. You've seen a couple examples. Yeah. I mean, anything there for fits, sleeve it. Like right now, if someone asked me to do a trick and I didn't know what to do, I wouldn't say, well, I don't have any props with me. I don't know what to do.
Look around.
I
said,
well, look at that. I see that little powder over there, a little bottle of powder. So I would go move the towel out of the way, and I would sleeve that thing baby powder. And then what can I turn into baby powder? Well, I see a white napkin. I see the litany of the white. Mm-hmm. So I would cut it up into little pieces like this and make like I'm going like this, like I'm sweating. The next day, you know, I'm making baby powder. And I finish it up that way. See how you tie it in? That's so sleeving gives you that ability to be creative on the spot.
Have you always had that natural ability just to like make connections between objects? Because I like you watch your show and I would never think, you know, peanuts to gum to Snickers to all these weird little interlaces.
It's nature. Let me ask you a question. If you were to take water and put it in your hand, what would that water turn into if you had to give someone a magical experience?
I mean, ice.
Ice! There you go. Ice, water, and steam is all 3 things in different forms. So you would produce either ice or steam. If you took peanut butter, I see peanut butter there. If I put peanut butter and smear it in my hands like this and opened up my hands, what do you think you would find there?
Peanuts?
Peanuts. If you take wine and put it in your hand, what would be there?
It's grapes, great. Right? Man.
If you want to really be bizarre, I see a cork over there. So maybe I would produce a wine cork. So there's a certain litany of things that make sense. That's why you notice that Snicker bar, why it gets such great reaction, because everyone has held one of those. Everyone has eaten one of those. Mm. And the fact that you're taking peanuts now, and where's it going with it? All of a sudden, it doesn't even get applause. It gets laughter.
Yeah.
It gets belly laughs because they connect in their mind.
It's the best type of response. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're just going, you're trying to find from A to B to C in a lot of cases.
Man. The magic is all around us. Yeah. It's all around, just a matter of tying it together and, you know, it makes sense. There's a litany of things that make sense.
It's great. You can sort of almost see it as a formula. Look around, find something you can sleeve, find another thing that is somehow connected to that thing. Okay. Bam.
Now,
there you go.
Sleeving is just not used to vanish something. Mm. Boom. Not just used to produce something. Boom.
As a transformer.
But as a transformer. Mm.
Yeah,
that's the biggest key to it, as a transformer, to transform two objects into another object. Well, it's endless. The magic that can be developed with that principle is absolutely endless.
Mm-hmm.
Endless. You can do every effect you want. Mutilations, you can take a napkin, wet it, soak it, and then dry it in front of her eyes.
Yeah.
And then later, I'll give you an example if you want to see a great little effect.
Sure, I mean, they won't be able to see it, but we'll describe it to them.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. It totally makes sense in how you take advantage of a disadvantage.
See, this is a great moment that we're experiencing right now that's a quintessential Rocco experience.
Sure.
Is that when Rocco is around, you never have any idea what's going to happen, but you know it's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's one of the great things.
And if you haven't watched, check out Franz Ferrari's Facebook page. They did a whole bunch of live casts. I'm pretty sure you can go back and
Facebook
watch them.
Live cast. It'll be on Franz's Facebook page.
Rocco, I think, has the best moments out of
any of them. Because he's going to do something crazy and great. It's okay. He's grabbed a handful
and
of something.
And these are all things he just put together moments before we recorded, which makes it way more impressive.
Wait, Rocco's going to do stuff. Okay, everyone immediately wants to watch because no one knows where it's going to go.
Right.
But you know it's going to go somewhere interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This, for example, happened by accident, and it happened so good that I taught it at the Murphy at the lecture.
Okay, so you're seeing Rocco has a boarded up ball of paper and a glass of water. Paper's in the glass, the paper is now soaked wet. He's fishing the water wet ball of paper out of the glass with a pen.
Right.
Sodden ball of paper, squeezing a little bit of water out of it, still extremely damp.
Yeah, it is. You can see that, right? Yeah. It's damp. You want to feel it?
Very damp ball of paper. Okay. Throws in the air.
Look.
And now beautiful. It's bone dry. That's
and
great.
He unrolls the paper and it's dry paper.
Now, to take it to the next level, since you had advantaged that wet napkin somewhere, well, why not just say, remember the pen that I took that out?
Mm.
Inside the pen, look.
Nice.
There's all the water.
That's genius.
Nice.
And then
this is Rocco grabbing the pen he used earlier, apparently squeezing the pen and having water dribble out of the pen.
This
itself.
Is magic for the blind.
Yeah.
And then re-sleeve your dry napkin because it's holding water already in there.
Wow.
So now it's a way to produce water. So produce it after you boom, boom, bang here. You dried it, take advantage of a dissipated, and
that's
then
great.
Boom, and then we get rid of your gimmick.
That's beautiful.
So that just came through being put on a spot.
That's great.
Like the other day, this guy asked me outside while I was on the bus. He said, show us the trick. And this is something I never did before. And I said, you know, that's a keeper. I'm going to use this in the lecture. And this one right here. What I did, I reached in my pocket to see what I had. And I was eating. So, let me see. I don't have it. What did I do? I did this. Let me see. Okay, here's what we did, okay? Because I eat peanuts. I always carry peanuts in my pocket. So I took a peanut. I said, look. See the peanut? Now you see the peanut. I got you looking here, right? The big motion, take it here. As you come here, that's when the hand swings down. Take the peanut, put the peanut in your hand, and open up, and look. Put it into a peanut.
So that was a shelled peanut became reshelled.
But where's the other peanut? Listen. You hear it?
Hearing it, yeah.
You hear it? Open up your hand. Peanut. Who's inside there? The guy reacted to us. Okay, that's a keeper.
That's funny.
You know?
So that's, is that a pistachio?
That's actually that's a pistachio. So nut,
pistachio,
yeah.
And then he makes it turn into a shelled peanut, and then he opens up the shelled peanut, and
to
the,
find
pistachio
the pistachio
comes
nut
out.
Inside
you could
the peanut
theoretically
shell.
Sign that pistachio.
You could. Yeah. Sign pistachio, not the peanut shell.
And that was an impromptu thing, you know, last minute, what's in your pocket? I mean, this guy gave me the other day, when magician came, he gave me a gift. What's the gift? I just put it in my sleeve. I got the gift that's in my sleeve. I just found it. So now here's the peanut here. Put the peanut here. And then look, turns into
wow.
a gift, which is a gold peanut.
Ah, oh, nice.
So you can find magic
yeah,
in the pocket.
All kinds
just,
of ways to.
All kinds of ways, you know.
Just changing things into things.
I'm not a big fan of card magic. I like card tricks. Mm. I like watching them. I like learning them, but they're tricks. You take out a deck of cards, you're going to do card tricks. Magic is not associated with cards, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, well, because as soon as you bring out, it lacks that organic nature that all these things
yeah,
have,
you know,
right? You're doing magic with the surrounding environment. You're connected to the universe.
And it looks more impromptu because 80% of the times it is.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, it kind of went with you program yourself. It comes pretty quick.
The other thing I've noticed about the magic you tend to do is it often is a lot more messy, and like in a good way, because
yeah.
it's interesting. It's, you know, pouring water into your hand or
mm-hmm.
peanut shells all over the place. You know? Often messy magic, which again makes it more visual, makes it more engaging, makes it feel more organic.
And the second you leave that space, the objects are still there. It's like, oh, it's just a constant reminder of what happened.
Reminders. I was in the lobby, downstairs in the lobby, and I'm looking on the ground and I see lips paper on the ground. So people, they tack to people's shoes, I guess, or they take a couple with them, and I find them all over the place. So it is a constant reminder that something happened here. So if you go to a parade, you know there was a parade there because there's confetti, and there's cotton candy, and there was a party, and there's garbage, and whatever. It's a pretty mess. I mean, normally I'd have glitter on my shoulder that I blow every 5 seconds, but I didn't want to do that here. I'm sure it would have been a mess.
Well, as we wrap up here, any parting advice for other performers, magicians, any words of wisdom that you always kind of carry with you?
Zen philosophy. Learn from everyone and everything all the time. Zen philosophy. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Zen philosophy. It's the space between the notes that makes the music. Because if you had one continuing note, it'd just be noise. And when Zen philosophy, and when you're green, you grow. And when you're ripe, you're rot. Contentment stifles improvement. So you've always got to think that you're inadequate, because that's how you're going to grow. And sometimes a bad show is good, because it puts you on your mark, man. It puts you on your feet. You say, okay, you got to make up for it. What did I do wrong? What went wrong? Okay, that trick got no response at all. Let's see what happens next show. And next show you get response. Say, okay, I just got a little paranoid. But if it doesn't get response, you say, okay, like I did that myself just now in this show here. For example, here you go. Here's a perfect example of it. I was producing four coins. One, two, three, four coins. And the last coin, there'll be nothing there. I go to throw it away, boom, the coin appears. I'm not getting a response. Then I tried this. I said, okay, one, two, three, and I tried this and this. I said, okay, magicians responded, but the lame has not responded. Then here's the keeper. One coin, two coins, and on the last coin, I will look at it, approve it, and then come over and then produce it. Whoa, it gets response. The last one doing this, throwing it away, boom, no response. Going like this, going like this, going like this. No response. But going like this, looking at it, approving it, and then coming back to do it, boom, response. I learned that just 3 days ago, and that's what I'm doing it forever now.
Wow.
Understand?
Yeah.
That's what gets to happen when you get to do it right away, 10 minutes later. Oh, let me fix that. Because this is the most I've worked in my life. I'm lucky. I'm happy if I do 25 shows a year, 20 shows a year. That is it. To do double that in a week? Crazy. I didn't think I was going to get through this. Mm-hmm. I really thought, okay, I'm going to get fired because I'm not going to be able to handle it. I'm going to feel tired. I'm not going to be jet lagged. I didn't think I was going to be able to pull this off. No.
Well, that's good. That gives me comfort because I was having the same thoughts.
Yeah, you do.
But you learn to live, like you said, live in the moment. You live. Okay, we have four shows today, and I'm at the 2 o'clock show. I'm only focusing on the 2 o'clock. Right. I'm not thinking about the four.
That's the biggest mistake we make in our lives. Thinking what's going to happen in the future. How am I going to support myself? How am I going to make a living, find a job? And then don't worry about the past. That just feeds the ego. Well, I did this. I did that. I did this. I know. It's now, in the present, in the moment. And here's my secret. We're going to read it. You're going to read it for me because I can't see too good. Today, the 20th of May, I mean.
That's how we'll end the podcast. We'll end it with this, your daily reading for today.
It's a fitting ending for the Rocco podcast.
This is beautiful.
So, I'm just sort of the Felicity. This is a 365-day devotional, Jesus Calling, Enjoying Peace in His Presence by Sarah Young. So Rocco, you read this every day. So each day this has a passage that you read.
These are the passages here, and this is what they mean in the words of Jesus Christ. Gotcha. So what's he trying to tell us?
Okay,
today?
So this is February 20th. Learn to live from your true center in me. I reside in the deepest depths of your being, in eternal union with your spirit. It is at this deep level that my peace reigns continually. You will not find lasting peace in the world around you, in circumstances, or in human relationships. The external world is always in flux, under the curse of death and decay. But there is a gold mine of peace deep within you, waiting to be tapped. Take time to delve into the riches of my residing presence. I want you to live increasingly from your real center, where my love has an eternal grip on you. I am Christ in you, the hope of glory. And then the passages are, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you are called to peace, and be thankful. Colossians 3:15. And to them God has chosen to make known amongst the Gentiles the glorious riches of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. Colossians 1:27.
You're an oracle genius. You have a great voice.
Thanks.
He presented that absolutely perfectly.
Well, thanks for doing this. This was super insightful. This was one of my favorite podcasts thus far.
If you want to learn some magic, go to www.roccosolano.com.
Rocco Solano. I'll put the link up to you. Yeah. RoccoSolano.com. And your products with Murphy's Magic should be out in May, new products.
Yeah. And if in doubt, Zen philosophy, what would Jesus do? And if it fits, sleeve it.
There you go.
Those are the three secrets of life.
That's it.
There you are.
It's been great, Rocco.
Bye-bye.
All right.